This afternoon, the speaker is to be H.G. Wells, widely read English novelist and sociologist, author of The Outline of History, The Open Conspiracy, and The Science of Life. We take you now to London, England.
This is London calling. As I see it, this week we come to the last of the talks in which world-famous people have discussed subjects that interest them. Mr. H.G. Wells is the speaker this evening.
I find myself on the air for the Empire Broadcasting Service, free to speak for a quarter of an hour on practically any subject that occurs to me, under this most liberating title of As I See It. As I Think About It would have been a better title. What I see is a brightly lit desk, a lamp, a microphone. But what I am thinking about is a great number of listeners in all sorts of rooms and places all around the world. We are, I guess, an extremely various and scattered lot indeed. Race, religion, colour, age. We have probably only one thing in common. We speak, write, and understand English. I want to talk about the community to which we belong. I see it as a tremendous world brotherhood, full of possibilities and full of promise for the common understanding of all mankind. I have been asked by the Empire Broadcasting Service to make this talk, but it is quite an uncontrolled talk, or I would not give it. I hold no brief for the Empire as such. Widely as it extends, it does not include the larger part of this English-speaking brotherhood of ours, which is, to my mind, something infinitely more real, more important, and more permanent. I spent this autumn in the United States. I was lecturing there about intellectual organization in schools and universities, and I talked with all sorts of people. We all talk the same language, in the same idiom of thought. We understood each other pretty thoroughly, yet we were drawn from the most diverse sources. It is a common mistake among English people to suppose that Americans are just English people transplanted. From the very beginning, the United States were of diverse origin, with Swedes, the Dutch, Germans, the French in Louisiana, the Spanish in California, were there as soon as the New Englanders. Afterwards, there was an enormous influx of Eastern Europeans. And again, in the British Empire itself, there is a great assembly of once alien peoples drawn together into a common interchange, from the Eskimo to the Maori. But the English language has amalgamated, or is amalgamating all these elements into a great cosmopolis, whose citizens can write to each other, speak freely and plainly to each other, exchange, acquire, and modify ideas with a minimum of difficulty. Once or twice before in history there has been such a synthesis, in the Latin world, in the Semitic world, but never on such a vast scale as in this English-speaking world in which we live and think today. And English has never been forced upon these multitudes who speak it now. They were never subdued to it or humiliated by it. They've taken it up freely, and they use it because it serves them best. Now, the thing that impresses me most about this English-speaking community is this, that it is not breaking up, and does not look like breaking up into different languages. In the past, that sort of thing did occur. Latin, as you know, broke up into French, Italian, Castilian, Catalan, and so on. But since then, a vast change has occurred in the conditions of human life. The forces of separation have been dwindling. The forces that bring us nearer to one another have been increasing. The printed word, books, newspapers, the talking movie, the radio, increasing travel, increasing trade. And all these things now forbid dispersal. History has gone into reverse. Instead of being divergent, we converge. We English speakers are being drawn together and learning more and more about each other. This reversal has been going on ever since the steamship and the railways appeared a century ago. It goes on faster and faster. In the past, new dialects were continually appearing. Now, dialects are disappearing. The curse of Babel has been lifted from over 300 million people. And having got this unprecedented instrument of thought spread all about the world, a net of understanding, what are we English speakers doing with it to get the best out of it? Are we growing into one mighty community of ideas and sympathies as rapidly as we might do? I do not think we are. Something, I admit, is being done, but nothing like what might be done if we grasped our possibilities to the full. Let me tell you, as briefly as I can, one or two of the things that might be done to make this great gift of a common language better worthwhile. First, about books. Nothing can pull our minds together as powerfully as books. We all want to read books according to our interests and habits. We find them so dear to buy or so difficult to borrow that most of us cannot read half the books we hear about. And three quarters of what books there are, we never hear about at all. This is true even here in London. Here I am on the telephone to well-stored bookshops and all sorts of people from whom I can get advice. But the majority of my listeners tonight may be living in parts of the empire, far away from the centres of book distribution. Mentally, many of them must suffer the torments of Tantalus. They perceive there is a great and refreshing flood of ideas, imaginative and informative matter, fantasy, poetical invention flowing through the English world, and they can get only a splash or so of it to their thirsty lips. In Great Britain, in the larger towns, you can buy a fair selection of the best books published, even quite new books, for from sixpence to a shilling. But in America, there are no really cheap books, and the great mass of the workers and poor people there never read books at all. There are public libraries, of course, where you can wait for books for quite a long time. Most of our 300 million English speakers, through no fault of their own, read nothing better than a few odd bit books that chance to come their way. They never acquire the habit of systematic book reading. English, which should be the key to all human thought and knowledge, is for them the key to a non-existent door. The reading, thinking section, the book reading section of the empire probably does not number a million all told. The rest either read newspapers or do not read at all. Now, before you blame the public or the schools or the booksellers for this immense illiteracy, this great mental underdevelopment, consider the difficulties of sending books about. Try sending a book, a good fat book, halfway round the world, and see what it costs you. You will realize that a special low postal rate for books and parcels of books, a special preference rate, a rate to encourage the sending of books, is one of the first things necessary before we can begin to realize the full cultural promise of our widespread English tongue. It is a matter that should concern every Ministry of Education. But does it? Book postage is not considered a public service. It is made a source of revenue. Now, until people like ourselves, who read and listen in and want to know, begin to make a fuss about it, matters will remain very much as they are. Cheap good books. Next comes the problem of how to hear of them, so that we may, from the ends of the earth, order the ones we really want and spend our sixpences properly. Well, probably half my hearers have never heard of what is called documentation. They think bibliography is something remote and scholastic. But really, bibliography is nothing more or less than indexing all that has been written in the world, so that you can find out quickly and surely what has been done, by whom, and under what title. Don't you want to know that? And do you know it? There are hundreds of clever people working out methods of indexing. In a little while, it'll be quite possible to print and keep up to date bibliographies, lists of all the best books in every great group of subjects in the world. It would be as easy to keep up such bibliography as it is to keep up the issue of railway timetables. The cost of producing these book guides need not be very much greater. I doubt if today 100,000 of us use any bibliographies at all. What is the good of reading unless you know what books to read? Bibliographies ought to lie about in every educated household. And another thing which we English speakers have a right to ask for, and that is a general summary of contemporary knowledge and ideas. A real, modern, adequate encyclopedia, kept up to date and available for the use of anyone. That would hold us all together, as nothing else could do. We should all be of a mind, and nothing on earth would stand against us. But is there anything of the sort? No. The latest encyclopedia in my study is dated 1929, 8 years old, and it is very old-fashioned. Discovery and invention have been going on vigorously for the past 8 years. And how are we to learn quickly about that new stuff? Does anyone care? Does any of our education departments? The French just now, in spite of threats of war, in spite of great financial difficulties, are making a new and admirably planned encyclopedia. You may think an encyclopedia is something only rich people can afford to buy. It ought not to be. If you can afford a radio set, if you can afford a motor car, surely you could afford an adequate summary of human thought and knowledge in your house, if there was one to be got. Encyclopedias need not be as dear as they are, any more than books or bibliographies. Cheaper books, handy bibliographies, a great encyclopedia, our English speaking needs all these things. When automobiles came along first, they seemed likely to become a rich man's monopoly. They cost upward of £1,000. Henry Ford ordered them all that. He put the poor man on the road. We want a Henry Ford today to modernize the distribution of knowledge, make good knowledge cheap and easy, in this still very ignorant, ill-educated, ill-served English-speaking world of ours, which might be the greatest power on earth for the good of mankind. Well, my quarter of an hour is drawing to an end. I haven't said half of what I would like to say. But if I have made you a little discontented with what is being done at present with this precious inheritance of ours, English, I shall not have used this little bit of time in vain.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard another in a series of informal talks on the contemporary world by leading figures in English life. Under the title, As I See It, this afternoon's program brought you a brief talk by H.G. Wells, outstanding English novelist, author of novels, essays, miscellany, and the famous Outline of History. The special shortwave broadcast was heard in America via RCA Communications through the cooperation of the British Broadcasting Corporation. This is the National Broadcasting Company.